Hey guys, it's Pleasant. I have two super fun, exciting ways for you to go deeper with your practice. Number one, if you go to littleom.com, littleom.com, there is a home practice tab up on the far right. There you will find five practices for you, three inspired by the Ayurvedic elements, one for monthly flows, expansion and contraction, and a daily energy practice just for everyday life. So jump on the website, grab those. It's $27 for the five practices. And we are starting our next session of Thrive Live, our fall session, at the end of September. If you want to join us, click on littleom.com/thrive and come thrive with us. We have office hours, live classes if you're in the DC area, sacred circles once a month, coaching with our community leader, Rita Stevens, who you've heard on the podcast, and myself. And we love to spoil our thrivers. So once you're a thriver, you're always a thriver, and you are always invited back each season. So come and really put yourself first this fall, your self-care, your soul care, learn about Ayurveda and the Thrive Five practices for everyday life. You can find everything at the website, littleom.com, and I can't wait to have you in our community. All right, take care. Okay, so today I have on the line my new favorite person on earth, and I'll tell you why. But this is Jeremy Frindell, and he is the filmmaker behind two of my most favorite, sacred, beautiful films that literally both of them, Jeremy, when I watch them, I just weep. Like, I feel like they are just practice alive. Like, they are just incredible pieces of art and connection. And so Jeremy is the filmmaker behind One Track Heart, the story of Krishna Das, and the film that I got to know him from, which is the Doctor from India, which is playing here in DC next week. I had the pleasure of seeing it in Baltimore in the spring, and it's just the most beautiful, sacred art come to life. So thank you so much for chatting
with me. Oh, thank you. Thank you for that beautiful introduction. Oh. I didn't know you were in Baltimore either. That was a fun night. Yeah.
Oh, it was packed and it was wonderful. I helped Susan with the tickets and just greeting people, and it was just phenomenal. And I think that the part I was sitting down to sort of reflect about before I knew we were going to chat about why they are so special. And I think for longtime practitioners of yoga, meditation, Eastern philosophy, spirituality, is that I don't always find our interest and our passions on film. Right? Like, I don't always feel so connected to modern pop culture. Mm-hmm. And what you have done to integrate and to really bring these practices alive and help them be so accessible for people is brilliant. So I really just want to honor the work that you're doing and say thank you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. You know, it's interesting trying to figure out how to bring that sense of connection and kind of like big heart space that comes through these sort of practices into a piece of art, and specifically cinema, of how do you translate that, some taste of that experience. And for me, it's something that I don't experience as often as I would like to in other films. So that's definitely been a bit of my like personal mission of how to, one of my favorite filmmakers, not necessarily because I love his film so much, but just because he's such an amazing character, Alejandro Jodorowsky, talks a lot about using cinema and art as a way to heal. Mm-hmm. It's like a healing mechanism and vehicle. And I think that's a big part of what I've tried to do with these two films specifically, is kind of open up a healing space and a space of connection, which I felt with both of those men, with Christian Doss and Dr. Lodd, so strongly. So to find a way to kind of create a vessel for the experience of them to be captured and, you know, spread in a way that, you know, they can't be with people all the time, but to kind of capture a little taste of what I felt with them through a film.
Well, and being able to share it, like as an Ayurvedic, so I do a lot of health coaching from a yoga and Ayurveda standpoint and lifestyle, that kind of wellness, holistic wellness. And one of the things is when I start talking about Ayurveda, I can kind of become hard to understand because I've been practicing and it's so deep. And I start talking about digesting emotions and integrating your whole life and, you know, just kind of going layer by layer. But so having your film and be like, okay, students, everyone watch this. And then we can talk about it. It's so helpful and it's so tangible. And so on one hand, it's such a sacred, piece of art that as a practitioner and a student of Ayurveda, I loved seeing Dr. Lodd talk about the connections. I love seeing him at home. I love seeing him with the students. It was just so intimate and beautiful. And then on the other hand, it really helps those of us who've been studying a while have that common ground for the introduction. And same with chanting with Krishna Das, right? Same with kirtan, same with spiritual devotion and bhakti, these things that sometimes when you've been practicing for so long, it's hard to bring it down to earth, I find. So I yeah. love having these tools, you know? Okay, can you tell me, how'd you get started with the film on KD? Because I heard you say in Baltimore that the film with KD is the one that sort of led to the one with Dr. Lodd. So can you give me a little bit of that history and the story?
Yeah, so I was, I mean, I'll take it like a few steps back. I was living in New York, working on films mostly. I hadn't actually directed any of my own films. I was working on short films and was developing a television series that I was starring in and basically kind of doing more comedy stuff and trying to make it in film and entertainment. And got sort of right on the edge of having, we had a big deal with IFC. I was supposed to be starring in my own television show and I'd finally made it, you know, I thought, and made it in quotes, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And like 2 weeks before we were going into production on the show, it got canceled by the network because of something with, anyway, like because of something that had nothing to do with the show itself. The show got dropped and I felt like my life was over. I was just totally devastated. And like months before I had totally randomly signed up for a Vipassana meditation retreat. Mm-hmm. I had never done any meditation. I'd never even like had really any introduction to any sort of spiritual practice. Mm-hmm. I'd always had kind of a longing towards the unseen, which I had explored in some capacity through music, through psychedelics, through philosophy, but never in any kind of a focused way. And I read this article, but there was always like a bit of a calling, like something, there was always something from like a pretty young age that would get tickled, but I never had anybody in my life that introduced me or like kind of led the way or even that I even knew that much was possible. And then I read this article with Rivers Cuomo, who's the main guy in Weezer, like a rock and roll band. And he was talking about how he would do these like 30-day silent meditation retreats. And it was a small piece of a bigger article, but for some reason it kind of stuck with me. And I looked up online what these retreats were. I saw that it was free. And I was just like, all right, I just kind of signed up for one. And I pretty much forgot about it after that. And I got swept into this show, and it was, we were supposed to go into production, and I really didn't think about it. And then when the show got dropped and I was laying in bed, depressed, unable to really move, it kind of like floated back through my mind, like, wait a minute, wasn't that meditation retreat thing something around now? So I looked, and it was like 2 days later. And I basically just like dragged myself over to the bus station and got on a bus and went up to Massachusetts pretty broken and sat down, and this retreat completely changed my life. That process of just kind of exploring my mind, you know, so much of it is about exploring craving and aversion, what we're drawn to, what we like move away from, and how compulsive so much of our thoughts and behavior and emotions are. And just really slowing down and taking a look at that and opening up my heart through this process, it just kind of broke me open in really profound and beautiful ways that are hard to articulate. But at the end of it, I knew that I had to change a lot of things about my life, and my priorities shifted. And suddenly, you know, being this like provocative comedian guy just didn't have the same draw, and I just wanted to be happy and figure out how to do that. And some part of me felt like I wanted to practice yoga to try to integrate in my body what I had experienced through my, by exploring my mind. I felt like I needed to move it into my body. I've always been very physical. I didn't know anybody that practiced yoga. I just kind of like went on the internet and found a place to go. And I went over to Integral Yoga. I decided to do a teacher training because I wanted, that seemed to really be the only
advanced studies sort of
vehicle to learn, you know.
I
didn't just want to go and take classes. I wanted to learn, and that was kind of the only like venue for that at the time, especially. So I just signed up for a teacher training. I haven't taken maybe like one yoga class in my life. And then in the process of that, the guy who was leading it brought a harmonium in. And as soon as he just like played the first note of the harmonium, it just opened me up. And I remembered that I had this CD where some guy was playing that. And it was, I didn't know anything about it other than that Rick Rubin had produced the CD. And it was something that I would put on, I think, when I was in college if I wanted to relax. So somehow, I don't even know how, but I'd ended up with a Krishnadas CD years before. I just knew he was the guy with the deep voice that Rick Rubin had produced this record. But as soon as the guy pulled out the harmonium, I connected it, knew what it was. I went home and I pulled out the CD, and I saw that Krishnadas was going to be doing a concert, I think was what I probably called it at the time, in New York, like a week later. So I went to this, his kirtan on the Upper West Side, and I just kind of fell in love with him right away. Felt, he kind of felt like family to me. He's a Jewish guy from Long Island. My whole family are Jews from Long Island. He was born like 2 days apart from my mom, the next town over. There was just something like instantly that felt familial about him. And then I went and I signed up for a retreat with him at Ananda Ashram. And Dharma Mitra was teaching the yoga classes on the retreat. So that weekend just really created a big course for the next chapter of my life. I ended up studying really intensely with Dharma for years. I traveled all over the world with him. I taught in his training programs. I spent pretty much every day by his side for probably 3 years. And I really kind of stepped away from all of the film work I was doing and dove really deep into study and practice of yoga and meditation. And, in that process, I got to know Krishnadas more. And the more time I spent around him, heard his stories, you know, after a couple of years, it was this kind of calling to tell his story rose up in me. And you know, I hadn't done any film work in that time. I don't even really understand how I paid my rent in that time when I look back. I started just selling all my stuff, and I had like this whole eBay store going. I don't know, somehow I managed to survive that time. And I asked Christian about it. I just like, it really struck me. I said, I want to make a film about your life. And he was like, all right. It was kind of that simple. I went to another friend who studied with Dharma, who I knew had a job and like was one of the few people I knew who had money, which was rare in my sphere, and would be somebody that would be inspired to, you know, put it in that direction. And I said, Andrew, I want to make a film about him. You want to get involved and help me? He said, right, that sounds great. Let's do it. And that was it. I found out later from Nina, who's kind of been Krishnadas's, you know, manager, so to speak, for a long time, that people had approached him many times over the years asking to make films about him, and they'd always been declined. And somehow the timing and the sort of, there was some kind of connection that felt right. And it just set off on this path where for the next few years, I was traveling all over the world with Krishnadas now with the camera, just really meet by myself, sleeping on the bus with them. So I stayed in his house for a while. And it was the most incredible, really a pilgrimage for me of meeting all of these incredible people, from Ram Dass to Larry Brilliant to Daniel Goleman to Sidhi Ma to just being really deeply immersed in Krishnadas's world and the people that he surrounded himself with. And it was a real, you know, blessing and transformative experience for me. Mm-hmm. And then in the process of that, really figuring out again how to make films and how I wanted to do that and what I was trying to convey. And, you know, I'd never really, even the work I'd done before, I'd never really used the camera barely at all. So I was just kind of figuring out a lot of things as I went. And he gave me a ton of freedom to really, I don't think anybody had any expectations for what I was doing, myself included. I think there was a part of me that felt like, you know, maybe this will end up being something on his merchandise booth at the end of the day, you know? Mm-hmm. But the film, I had no idea what I had. At the end of the day, I was started just kind of submitting it to, when I reached a point where I felt like I was done after 3 or 4 years. And then I just started submitting it blindly to places that I thought it would be cool if it played, like the Sundance Film Festival. I'm scribbling on a CD in an envelope and sending it there, and really having no idea what I was doing. And then it got accepted into the Maui Film Festival. And that was the world premiere, and it won best film at the festival, best documentary at the festival. And then it got picked up to screen at Lincoln Center as part of the Art of the Real, and it sold out in a day. And then we got picked up by Zeitgeist Films for distribution, and they released it all over the country and theaters. And it really just kind of took on a life that I think stunned all of us and has really connected with people and moved people. I still hear from people of how the film has affected them, and it changed my life the whole way it went. And at the end of it, I was really clear, like, this is what I do now. Mm-hmm. This is what I want to do, and now I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm. And that brought you to Dr. Ladd's movie, right? And sort of, were you looking, how long, what was the time between the KD movie coming out, One Track Heart, and the Dr. Ladd film in terms of development? Like, I don't know anything about films or filmmaking, Jeremy, so you have to fill me in on what does that look like with logistics?
With documentary films, it can look an infinite variety of ways. Mm-hmm. It can be something that's like very well funded with a large team that can be completed sometimes in as little as 1 year. Mm-hmm. Or it can be one person working by themselves for 10 to 20 years is not uncommon for a film to take that long. So it can really look a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. For One Track Heart, up until like the post-production part, it was really just me, myself. You know, I would show up at people's doors with covered in gear, with like lights and camera and microphone and all this stuff. And I remember showing up at people's houses and they would see me carrying all this stuff and I was by myself and I could feel them like, oh God, what have I gotten into?
I was going to say, they must have really loved him to just open their door to you, right? Yeah.
But then after One Track Heart, I felt like, okay, now I want to try to figure out how to do this in a slightly more professional way. And had a variety of projects that I was developing. But I was really clear I didn't want to do another film about Eastern spirituality. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be like the yoga movie guy. Yeah. I wanted to like do something different and show that I had some range. And I was kind of trying to look at it as like in a sort of a career sense. And I was actually shot for about a year a film about the band Foreigner.
Okay.
So I traveled with those guys a bit and was shooting and developing and putting together this project that was something that was, I was approached about and I kind of like talked myself into a little bit. It was never like a project that moved my heart in a profound way. But it was something that was kind of interesting. And then after a while it was, I knew that I didn't want to do that. And it wasn't like financing wasn't quite coming together. And, in that time I met Dr. Laud. I was sort of asked to go on a week retreat by a friend with him and I didn't really want to go, but, I didn't really know much about Dr. Laud and I was just kind of at a point in my life where I was sort of tired of going to yoga talks. So I think was probably how I would have put it in my mind.
I understand. But then,
it was at Ananda Ashram and it was the summertime and they have a swimming pool. And I was like, all right, let's just go and I'll hang out at the pool. And then I walked in the room and I met Dr. Laud and I just fell in love with him. And I spent the whole week there and it didn't cross my mind at all to make a film about Dr. Laud, which is really rare for me because I'm always looking for film ideas and sniffing things out. And somehow it just never crossed my mind. And then on the last day of the retreat, I met Sartaj, who I've now met in the screenings at DC, who's just such a like incredibly beautiful man. We ended up sitting next to each other in the puja, like the final puja closing the week of teachings. And he found out I'd made the film about Krishnadas and somehow we were talking and the idea to make a film about Dr. Laud came up and he knew Dr. Laud and a few days later got him on the phone and started talking to him about it. And within a couple months, Sartaj had written me a check for the root funding for the film. And I was in India filming. It happened really fast and it felt like something that was supposed to be happening in some sort of cosmic sense. It felt like I just kind of walked into this project that was what was supposed to be the next thing I was doing. And Dr. Laud is just such a gem. And after having spent so many years hanging around Krishnadas and Dharma Mitra and going to all these yoga conferences and all of these things, I couldn't believe that I didn't know more about Dr. Laud.
Yeah.
Because he's just such an embodiment of this lineage of teachings and these practices and such a real deep way. So as soon as I met him, I wanted to go deeper and experience him and learn more about him and be with him and ultimately tell his story and share his story and try to find a way to create this kind of like, I think of him as like sort of cinematic vessels to have an experience that is hopefully going to be healing and open people's heart and inspire them to, you know, move into wider, more compassionate directions in their own life, to some extent, which is, you know, the effect that Dr. Laud had on me. So to find a way to share that with whoever finds their way to the film.
So I think that one of the things that really struck me is that I have not studied with Dr. Laud in person. My main Ayurveda teachers, I have been studying with a woman in California for a number of years on her courses and then doing whatever I could locally and with teachers locally. And I find myself right now, because of the climate in spirituality, yoga, meditation, not actually having male teachers at all. Like, I just kind of stay away. It's just how everything has fallen.
Entirely understandable.
The trust and every lineage of everything I've ever studied, and now Shambhala. I mean, I just am like, I can't with these guys. So I have not been studying with male teachers. Eric Schiffman was my yoga teacher for a long time and continues to be the largest divine feminine energy in my life, which is hilarious because he's obviously not a woman, but he is just such an embodiment. Have you ever met Eric in real life?
I've never met him. I know another woman that studies with him and has studied with him for a long time though. And he seems great, but I've never met him.
Dumbledore, right? You just want to like fall into him. He's just so embodies his true self and allows everybody else in the room to do that, right? Like constant questioning and flow and intuitive freedom yoga, right? So he is my main influence over the past few years, the only male. Otherwise, I study with Angela Farmer and other sort of female representatives. And then on the Ayurveda side also, I've really stayed close to more modern Ayurveda female teachers. So I kind of was rolling my eyes about Dr. Lodd. Like, that's my truth, is that I was like, no, I'm not really a Deepak. I'm not a Chopra fan. I don't follow any of that world. It's too much for me. There's nothing wrong with it. It's nothing wrong with anybody who does. It's just not for me. I just am not in that realm.
Sure.
So, which is really interesting, that whole thing that came up in your film, which I just could not stop thinking about. So I was not a Dr. Lodd. Like, I was not in that camp. I was not in that lineage. I was not studying from him. And I just kind of stayed away from it. I went to the film. I mean, it was exactly like you said. The minute you see his softness, his gentleness, his tenderness, his clarity and articulation and love for his wife and in nature, how in tune he is, how the harmony that he literally embodies, it was breathtaking. And I remember leaving, I was driving back to DC and I like took a note, you know, I said like, Siri, take a note, look up Dr. Lodd's teaching schedule, must go see him. So it was kind of like, I realized the age, and we talked about this, I think at the end of your Q&A at the Baltimore screening, was like, someone had asked about him and his schedule, and Susan and everybody there was like, just go now, because there is a certain amount of, you know, time in our lives. And so I actually have sitting right here in my office on my 2019 trips, Dr. Lodd ? And I've got down the dates that he's going to be back and teaching. And so I really, again, just want to encourage that sort of like having experience. I actually have to say that I didn't realize how closed I was to him or his teachings, or that was coming up for me until I sort of dove in and then realized, oh, why don't I really know this guy? And I said, oh, because I've been staying away from him. Because I think the integrity piece is huge right now in our spiritual communities, you know?
Absolutely. And I feel like you're not the first person that I've heard say some version of that.
Yeah.
Of whether it's like the guru thing, whether it's the male teacher thing, you know, whatever sort of slant it takes with people, there's trust has been broken so repeatedly that it's hard to kind of buy into the whole framework at all for a lot of people. And I think that's one thing I really love about, I mean, one of the many things I love about Dr. Lodd is he's not playing the guru game, so to speak.
Right.
Just is, you know, he's just himself, and he's there and he's available. Yeah. And his main thing is teaching people to empower themselves. And he's not from the way I understand the sort of like tradition of the guru setup, you put your trust in somebody else and ultimately that you become your own teacher at the end of the day, but you have to sort of give yourself over to somebody in the process, which is a scary thing. And mm-hmm. when that's been abused so repeatedly, it's also a cultural thing. I mean, maybe in some cultures mm-hmm. that's a more natural thing. And in the Western mm-hmm. culture, we have all of this different programming that's been put in us from such a young age that it doesn't work as well with Westerners.
Well, I'm a Jewish
girl.
Who
knows what it is?
Yeah, I mean, I'm from Connecticut, and you know, in Judaism, there's so much around this is around intelligence and intellect and academia and schools being the way. So really shifting gears and looking at nature, it's just a totally different mindset shift and experience that's not always tangible that you can talk about. Because again, like I said, I didn't even realize that I was moving away. It was just intuitively, I was getting really sick of the stories. And I think just losing so much trust in the system, and then that sort of that more critical nature comes in, that is so ingrained.
and so much of Ayurveda is about, you know, like empowering yourself.
Totally. Totally.
You learn how to take care of yourself.
That's what
you learn
about
to like
it.
Listen and like my favorite, I think the deepest teaching for me is Prajnaparadha, which is crimes against wisdom, that mm-hmm. the root of all disease is doing things you know you shouldn't do.
Yes.
But that's the fundamental teaching of Ayurveda.
Yeah.
It's very empowering. Ugh. It's not at all a disempowering situation where you give yourself over and to another person. It's about learning to empower yourself and listen to your body, and that ultimately we're the greatest doctors and the greatest teachers that we could have, and that it's all inside of us.
And that whole mothering, nourishing aspect around kind of asking yourself each morning, each day, each cycle, each season, how can I take care of you? You know, mentally speaking to yourself that way, kindly, gently, mm-hmm. what do you need, my dear? That kind of really deep relationship to yourself that I think so much of our culture, especially in parenting, I don't know if you have children. Children.
I actually just had a baby 3 weeks ago.
Oh my goodness.
So I'm like figuring that was kind of like, yeah.
Congrats. Mazel tov.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's been an amazing, wild month. Yeah. Oh,
I can imagine. Are you exhausted?
Yes.
Yes. I'm so proud of you for being on this call. Good work. Make them clear. But it's that piece that I do for my kids every day when they wake up. I greet them with that warmth and that nourishing and that I see you, I hear you, I love you. And
no matter whether you're cute as anything or screaming your face off.
Totally. If you're starving.
In all settings, yeah.
Hungry, are you hungry? Do you need to shower? Do you need a walk? You know, asking those questions, but very few women that I work with and I know and in my life and in my community and men as well, but I'm obsessed with women, so I'll talk about women, but men as well, wake up and ask themselves that. How can we turn ourselves at this level? And for me, once you get in the habit of doing that as your Ayurvedic practice, your spiritual practice, your sacred practice, your daily practice, your well-being practice, your mindfulness, it doesn't matter what you call it, but once you start to take care of yourself like you would your children, it's like healing, energy, vitality. It just has a place to live.
Yes.
And it's profoundly healing and magical at every level. So I think you did just such a beautiful job. I want to ask you, and then I do want to be mindful of your time, especially because you have this. Do you have a boy or a girl?
It's a little boy named Dylan.
Oh, delicious. Mm-hmm. So spending all of this intimate time with Katie and Dr. Ladd, I can only imagine that some things change. And you talked a little bit about it, about especially with the Katie film, it was like a pilgrimage. But were there any specific practices or shifts that you picked up or that were kind of contagious for you while you were with them?
I think that like maybe the like most fundamental thing from, if I sort of take it all as this, like, I guess maybe like 10-year ride from beginning the KD film to now sharing the Dr. Lodge film, is this sort of expansion of the idea of who we can be and what we can do with our lives. I think spending so much time and meeting all of these different people who've devoted their lives to living as compassionately, with as much wisdom and sensitivity and bigness of heart and presence, meeting so many people who've, that's their life's work, is just becoming better, sort of like, so to speak, better, but like bigger, more compassionate, more loving people. It really busted open my idea of what we, who we could be and what we could do with our lives, and definitely changed, I would say, before I started all of this practice. I think what I wanted in life was to be like famous and successful, and for people to think I was like special, you know. Mm-hmm. I think I was really caught up in like a lot of these ideas that come with being like a, I was a musician before I was a filmmaker, and I think I just wanted, so much was like wanting people to like tell me I was great, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that I was okay, and that I was worthy of love, and all of these sort of things that get wrapped up in that. Mm-hmm. And I think after spending all of this time with these people and diving into these practices in this way, it's made this massive shift of how can I love, and mm-hmm. just kind of like reversed it. To some extent. I mean, I still get caught in the same stupid shit that I've always got caught in at times, and those programs are running, and mm-hmm. but I don't take them as seriously anymore. Mm-hmm. And I definitely like constantly working to reroute that energy in a different direction, and seeing people and being, you know, surrounded by people like Krishnadas and Dr. Lodge, and meeting people like Siddhima, who was the, she's sort of mentioned in One Track Heart, but she wouldn't appear in the film. But she was, when Maharaji Neem Karoli Baba left his body, basically all of the temples and that lineage was left in her hands, and she was this amazing saint. And I was able to spend some really incredible time with her, and while traveling with Krishnadas, and also on my own separate. So just being around these people and having this example and this like visceral experience of how you can reorient your life in a different way. And this, like what we were talking about, of trusting ourselves and loving ourselves and taking care of ourselves. And I would say now what I'm kind of, where my place is not so much looking to somebody else that has the answers outside of me, mm-hmm. but to like trusting myself that, especially now that I'm a father and I've got this little guy who I have to trust myself to take care of. Mm-hmm. And my, you know, my partner and I, that we trust in ourselves, that, I mean, it's sort of bizarre sometimes that it's like, holy shit, who put us in charge?
yeah, I know. Where's that but, manual? You know,
this is a joke, right? Somebody's going to come in and take over. But, you know, trusting that no, like, this is where I can do this. I've got it all inside of me. And just continuing to cultivate and trust and love myself and try to take care of everybody in my life and around me to the best that I can. And I'd say that's like the most basic and lasting teaching and example that I've been blessed with from, you know, these experiences of traveling and getting to live so intimately with really incredible people.
And over time, right? Like, you are not saying that you did this, you know, made these films and did this work over the past 3 months or in 24 hours or in a week. Is that one of the things that I think is happening in healing and wellness and spirituality is this, you know, do this meditation and it will all be fixed now, and this sort of speed.
This is a lifetime of work.
That's what I'm saying. I'm always reminding people that this stuff takes time.
And even when you've been doing it for years, you still fuck up. I mean, that was one of the things that I felt was most important about the Krishnadasa story.
Yeah.
Is after meeting Maharaji and spending all of these years in these practices and absorption, he gets totally lost in the crack. You know, he becomes a crack addict.
Yeah.
And like for years is lost after all, like after meeting the person that to him is the walking embodiment of like the most profound love in the universe. We're never in the clear. It's like a constant practice and work, and like to forgive ourselves, for him to forgive himself for like getting lost, and then to pick himself back up and get back on the path and sit back down.
Did you see the Mr. Rogers documentary?
I loved it.
Oh my God. It was so beautiful. I can't. Another one that I just wept the whole time. And the thing that struck me is that at the end, after all that work and intention and clarity and impact, he still was saying it's not enough.
Yeah.
Right? He still had that humility of I could do more.
Or beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time.
Did this do anything for people? I don't know if I can help. You know, and that seeker soul, like that was what was so profound to me, was that he never got to a place where he was like, okay, I'm good. Like I've done, you know, this is it. Or now I've got it, quote unquote, all figured out. Like,
did you ever read the journals of Mother Teresa, her last years?
Yes.
Or hear about those?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes.
After all she'd done, she was convinced she was a sham and was like shut out from the heart of God.
Yes. It's that same. And that for me, as someone who's a seeker, as someone who just wants to have these conversations and like really dig into the hard stuff and the good stuff and keep evolving and keep learning, I don't see that there's ever going to be a point when that stops. And when people say things to me like, oh, you have it, quote unquote, all figured out, I say, no, I'm just learning and sharing and expanding and trying this and exploring. And that's going to be this journey. Like, that's actually the part that's so interesting to me, is to continue to have that kind of zest for life, right? That kind of, energy that's hard to put a finger on, because it's what like gets me up every day, you know, and sort of always has. I was the, you know, the little kid reading psychology books and spirituality books and trying to think about life, you know? So I think that the Mr. Rogers film was so amazing. It was so good.
Yeah, it was beautiful. So
right now, right? So needed.
You couldn't dream up of like a better film of this like conservative Republican Christian that is the most like humble, beautiful, non-judgmental, open-hearted man doing a life of service. Mm-hmm. Like for that message to come through at this time and amidst it, in addition to all of the other incredible teachings in that film.
And the history part, that was the other thing that was beautiful, is like, we do hard things. We've been through hard things as a country. We have some really difficult conversations that we've had and that we need to have. And putting some of the historical context was really important. I just thought that was a really important message too for right now.
I loved that film was coming out around the same time as The Doctor from India. Yeah. Because I felt a real kinship between Dr. Lodd and Mr. Rogers. And like there was a couple of theaters where their posters were both on the wall at the same time. And it just made me so happy.
What are you working on now? Being a dad? Are you able to do any filmmaking now? What's next?
I am actually like sitting at my desk with my next film up on the monitor here, which is called Space Fox.
Okay.
It is, it's interesting because there's, in some ways it's very different than the other films I've done. And in another mm-hmm. way, it's like, there's definitely themes. So this is, this guy, Marty Friedman, who is a Jewish guy from Baltimore,
mm-hmm.
Was the lead guitarist for the band Megadeth. Okay. In their heyday. So he was a huge rock star. His whole life was obsessed with Japan and never really knew why. He'd only had Japanese girlfriends his whole life. He'd always been drawn to all things Japan as a high school kid when everyone else was copying Eddie Van Halen on the guitar. He was learning like traditional Japanese vocal music and figuring out how to play it on his guitar. And towards the end of his time with Megadeth, when Megadeth went from like a giant leap, like one of the biggest bands in the world, selling out Madison Square Garden and places like that, to like on the downfall after grunge had kind of exploded, he was feeling like he wanted to leave the band. He was only listening to Japanese music. He'd like learned to speak fluent Japanese on the tour bus while everyone else was doing drugs and playing video games on the bus. He was studying Japanese. And he ended up having a nervous breakdown, becoming hospitalized, basically just had a complete breakdown, and then quits the band and disappears. And nobody really knew what had happened to him. He didn't tell anybody in the band or where he'd gone. He just disappeared, sold his house, and moved to Tokyo to try to play Japanese pop music. Like, he loved all these, like the equivalent of like Britney Spears here, the Japanese version of that, or the Spice Girls or something like uh-huh. that was his jam, was the Japanese version of that. So he goes from Megadeth to trying to play with like the Japanese Spice Girls, so to speak.
Wow.
And he gets a gig with one of the biggest pop stars in Japan. And these TV producers see this like weird long haired white guy that speaks fluent Japanese, and they craft this TV show around him. And he ends up becoming one of the biggest television comedians in Japan, which is where he remains today.
Wow.
So the film is really about reinvention. And it's also about this, yeah. like, which is kind of, I feel like, in some sense, what One Track Heart is about, which in some ways is like a bit of what Dr. Lott has done, of this like sharing of, cultural sharing, and also this ability to reinvent ourselves. So this film is pretty, like, it's kind of, there's a lot of comedy elements, there's a whole like anime element. I'm having a blast making it. It's been
Yay.
Really, really fun.
That's the
and
best
I'm really
part.
Excited about it. I think it's really different than the other films, but I think it's got like a big heart. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I did a Q&A with a friend of mine, who's this guy, Josh Radner, who was on a TV show called How I Met Your Mother. And he's made like a couple other films that were really beautiful. And he described in the Q&A we did together for One Track Heart, he described his films that the spirituality is kind of like a Trojan horse, that it's like he's sneaking in these big themes and ideas in a package that is a bit more palatable for people. Where they don't even necessarily know that it's not like so overt. So I think the spirituality in One Track Heart and Doctor from India is obviously like the theme of the film in some capacity, some ways. With this one, I think it's like, it's a little bit underneath in a way that, and mm-hmm. I think it's going to reach an audience that wouldn't necessarily be suspecting it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really excited about it. It's been a very different kind of film for me to make. It's been really fun. And I think it's a film that's got a lot of heart in Marty's, for him to walk away from, you know, being in this incredibly successful rock and roll band that people dream of, to just walk away from that and reinvent yourself is an incredibly courageous move. And then what he ended up doing is so wild and unexpected. At any moment in our lives, we can totally recreate who we are and what we want to do. And I think that's really inspiring and a good reminder.
Limitless possibility. That was my like word of the year last year. Phrase of the year. Limitless possibility. That's what it sounds like. When's it coming out?
Yeah. I think next year, hopefully.
Okay.
I'm like getting pretty close to having my first assembly, hopefully in the next couple months. So right now I'm digging in. I actually just did my first shoot since having the baby last week, which was a totally delirious experience. But it worked out all right.
You don't even realize you're in a baby fog until you come out of it, like after 6 months usually. And then you say, oh, now I'm starting to feel like myself again. I didn't even realize how foggy I was.
A friend of mine the other day told me, like, you know, you're just going to be operating at about 70% for a good long stretch of time. Just like accept it, get used to it, and you'll be fine.
Oh, but it's a delicious time.
It's really sweet.
Okay, so I want to close by saying we've had, I just looked, almost 40, this is our 40th episode, and you're the first male I've had on the podcast. So I feel very excited. It didn't occur to me until we started recording, and I speak so much about women, and I said, oh, this is actually the first man. But to close, I just really want to honor the work that you do, tell you how much I appreciate what you've put into the world, what an act of service and love sharing these stories, and how incredibly valuable that ripple is out to, again, regular people like myself, living in Washington, D.C., raising two kids, running a business, being married, having these little gems of sacred, did you see the Ram Dass documentary that came out?
The short film, the new one?
Yes.
Yeah.
So sometimes I just watch it in the morning. I watch clips from One Track Heart. I can't watch clips from Doctor from India yet, but I'll watch the Ram Dass or your film or the Wayne Dyer film. And I just, it's a way of practice. It's a way of integrating, watching these lives. I do think we need to have one on women now that I'm thinking about it. There's all these men movies that I watch, but that's another story. But that you're like in with me in the kitchen, right? In the mornings at 5:30 a.m. when I'm looking for a way to connect and listen to teachings, that this is rippling out into our homes and into our kitchens, and that the, especially with Dr. Ladd and the teachings of Ayurveda, it is so important right now in our world, in this climate, to have this wisdom, to have this traditional wisdom, these connections to nature and to our plants and to our healing. It feels, and I think he says this at the end of the film, right? He talks about this connection between Eastern and Western medicine, and that we're not in conflict, that we are working together. And I really, really just want to honor the work that you've done with this, and thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for, you know, being part of the screenings in DC and having me on and talking about it. You know, it's, I feel really lucky to be able to do what I'm doing. And the most meaningful part is when people are touched and moved, and it's like this circular dialogue that's happening that I feel like I'm kind of in the middle of in like a certain way. So I thank you.
And good luck with that little baby. Give him a big squeeze.
Yeah, I'm going to go out and see what he's getting into out in the other room right now.
Right. Have a good afternoon. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.